This is Chris Pyle of Pyle Tribe. Don't change that dial. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Yeah. Shake the house, shake WRCT. You're listening to Courts in Session with the latest from the Borstal Boys, Pittsburgh Rock and Roll, Rocky Lamondi, Vinnie Q in the station with us tonight. What a great track, man. What a great time, guys. Listen, you guys come back. We want to have you back here. This is terrific.
We're going to come back every week.
Great. So, new album is called Time Bomb. You can catch it online. You can catch it at your local record store. And you can catch the Borstal Boys with Eddie Spaghetti.
March 14th down at the Smiling Moose in the South Side. So come on out to that show.
Oh, that's going to be great. That's going to be absolutely terrific. So listen, I don't want you guys to go. Can you stick around for the last half hour as we're doing the rest of the show?
We sure can.
Love to.
All right. So WRCT is supported by Row House Cinema. Row House Cinema is a single screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week they choose a new movie theme ranging from classic, cult, foreign, animation, fantasy, and more. Their concessions feature natural popcorn with real butter, guys,
craft beer
in the adjoining bottle shop, and vegan options. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, you can visit their website at rowhousecinema.com or give them a call at 412-904-3225. Row House Cinema, our sponsor for the last half hour of tonight's show. And if you're interested in underwriting for Courts in Session or any of the great shows here at WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. All right, guys. So when we were playing music, the phones were ringing. We got a whole bunch of requests for this next song. This song is Hot, Hot, Hot. And you're not going to hear it anywhere else on the radio in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm anxious for this one.
All right. This is brand new from this guy coming up with the initials JLT. And if all the stars are aligned, he's going to be joining me next week on Courts in Session.
Hey, everybody. This is Joe Lynn Turner. And whenever I'm in trouble with the law in Pittsburgh, I call my rockin' attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, on WRCT 88.3 FM, Pittsburgh.
Slipping away.
most popular song, most requested song at Courts in Session right now. New from Joe Lynn Turner. Track is called Forever, and new music from classic artists you're not going to hear anywhere else on the radio. Still in the studio with the guys from the Borstal Boys. Hey. They're going to help close out the show. And if you follow me on Instagram, you know that I posted that this week I was going to tell a little personal story about one of my favorite pianists of all time, Peter Nero, who passed away last week. If you're scratching your head saying, how do I know Peter Nero? Well, he's been part of the background soundtrack of everyone's life with Grammys, millions of albums sold from songs like Summer of 42, Jesus Christ Superstar. And Ray Charles once said that Peter Nero was the greatest pianist he had ever heard.
Wow.
You know, so about 10 years ago, my wife took me to meet him. He was conducting the Philadelphia Pops. And sitting here with Rocky and Vinny, we were talking about back in our younger days, long, long time ago, as Don McLean used to say, yours truly, EJL, used to box. Well, 10 years ago, I got to meet Peter Nero with my wife after a Philadelphia Pop show. And it was just a bunch of miserable ancient women who were writing checks for the Philadelphia Pops. And you know what? Talking about Peter Nero, let's get some Peter Nero in the background.
Yeah, because this is the greatest. This is one of the best rock and roll stories ever.
In the background. Now, there we go. We got a bed of Peter Nero in the background doing Jesus Christ Superstar. But so my wife took me to meet Peter Nero, and I was over the moon because he is just off the hook. If you like jazz piano, man, there's nobody better. And when it finally became my turn to get to meet him, and we were last in line, there was a table between the two of us, and I bent down and I called him Mr. Nero, and I said, you know, I'm on the radio and I'm a lifelong fan, and he had zero interest. He wanted to go. He'd spend this time with all these donors who were miserable. And so I tried to win him over, and I said, you know, I've got two children who are 4 and 5 with a record player, and they play their 45 of Jesus Christ Superstar from 1973. And he looked at me and he said, and?
Oh, that's
and
tough.
I said, well, you know, we're just such big fans, and you've just had such an impact on our entire life. And he looked at me and said, yes. And every guy in the audience can relate to this. Sometimes you got to get a little physical with somebody, maybe give them a little punch.
This is beautiful.
I was just trying to get a smile from the legend.
Come on.
What happened?
And with the table between us, I leaned over with a little left hook to just give him a little tap in the ribs, just try to get a smile.
Little guy tap,
but the distance from the table threw me off, and I had to like throw my little left hook a little harder to reach him. Well, it was terrible.
He dropped your guess.
I sunk my fist under his rib cage. He literally went down to his knees. His manager screamed. My wife shouted out in shock. I stood there frozen. I just hit Peter Nero, and he went to the deck.
Now that is rock and roll. Right
and he, there. I didn't know what to do. I was frozen. He stood up. He looked me right in the eye, walked around the table, and gave me a bear hug.
Now that's a dude.
And then from that point, he talked my ear off for the next hour, and we became buddies that night. So in honor
what
of...
What year was that, Eric?
10 years ago.
10 years.
In honor of the great Peter Nero, who passed away last week.
Beautiful.
This is some Jesus Christ Superstar.
but she is still captured by his spell. She knows now she must deceive him. He knows it all too well. She comes and goes, she comes and goes. He knows.
side, where the world stands still. Steal my heart away. Cause I know when I'm with you again, you just steal my heart away. I know when I'm with you again, you just steal my heart away.
Steal My Heart Away, Van Morrison, Willie Nelson. How about that for a duet? Brand new from Van the Man right here on WRCT. Well, what about tonight? Big shout out to Leslie Mandaki and Tony Carey calling in from Germany. Mandaki Soulmates coming to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame February 6th. That's next Thursday. Going to be a terrific show. And who out there is going to make that road trip? EJL is going to be there for sure. And how about all that great Pittsburgh rock and roll we heard from the Borstal Boys? Big thank you going out to Rocky Lamondi and Vinnie Q. They have left the station. The limo is gone. As they say, Elvis has left the building. So we got a new show coming up after Courts in Session tonight. The schedule has been rearranged. It's going to be exciting. Don't change that dial. Keep it right here on 88.3 FM. New show is going to be called Record Roulette. It's not going to be. It is called. It's been on for a long time. It's now moved to After Courts in Session. DJs Sideways, Peachy, Did You Know, and Flipper are going to keep you entertained all night. It's going to be great, and I'm going to be listening on my way home. So let's close out with some more Pittsburgh rock and roll. Going back a few years to DT and some Shakers. Unfortunately, DT passed away, but he left us with one great final album, and we'll close the show with that. I'm your rocking attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, reminding you, take care of each other, be kind to each other, and be proud to be American. Let's get back together next Thursday at 8, and keep in mind, Joe Lynn Turner, the great Joe Lynn Turner, is going to be joining us on the air. Good night, Pittsburgh.
Welcome, everybody, to this very special edition of the Don Lemon Show, Lemon Live. It's not live at 5, we're live at 10:30. Well, 10:45, close enough. We're so happy that you could be here. We have some big breaking news to talk about. You see some folks there on your screen, and we're happy to have both of them. Patrick Akulikan is here. He is the editor-in-chief of Minnesota Reformer. I am interested to hear everything Minnesota to see what they have to say. But first, we must speak with Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, Austin Davis. Thank you very much for joining us, both of you gentlemen. So, Lieutenant Governor, to you first. If you had asked me a couple of days ago, and this is what I said, and I intended to put this out on social media, but the vice president beat me to it this morning. If you had asked me a couple of days ago, I would say that Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, your governor, had it in the bag. But apparently that was not the case. And I believed even as of maybe 2 days ago that it would be Tim Walz, because young people like him, progressives like him, in a way you get the Israel-Gaza situation off the table. He came up with the whole weird thing, which really resonated. He's a very effective communicator, and social media loves him as well, cable news as well. What do you think about this choice? Because I'm sure you would have thought that it would be Josh Shapiro, perhaps.
Well, you know, what we have said all along is the choice of a running mate is a deeply personal decision that's left up to Vice President Harris as she kind of molds her ticket and, quite frankly, the government that she wants to lead. And it's important for her to have the person that she feels that she can best work with. And she made that decision, right? I think the fact that Josh Shapiro has made it to be a top contender is a testament to the great work that he and our administration has been doing here in Pennsylvania to deliver good results for working class people here. So, you know, ultimately she made her decision. We look forward and stand ready to support the Harris-Walz ticket through November to make sure that not only do they win Pennsylvania, but we win this election.
But Lieutenant Governor, you're right. The Harris-Walz ticket will need Pennsylvania. Obviously it is a very consequential state. You need Pennsylvania. You cannot win the election without Pennsylvania. Do you think that this hurts the vice president's chances, the Harris-Walz ticket's chances of winning Pennsylvania?
You know, what I think is the most important thing is not necessarily, you know, who the vice presidential candidate pick is. I think it's more important the vision that Vice President Harris lays out for the country, how she's going to help elevate working class families, how she's going to help bring down costs to create an economy that works for everyone, how she's going to make our community safer. And I think that's what people want to hear from presidential candidates, how they're going to make their lives better, how they're going to impact families like mine. I'm the proud son of a union bus driver and a hairdresser, how they're going to help folks get ahead and create an America where everyone has the opportunity to live the American dream. And so I think she has 90 days to lay out her vision. I think by the end of this campaign, people are going to see that the contrast is clear between a vision of moving America forward and a vision from Donald Trump who wants to, quite frankly, take us backwards. And I think ultimately they're going to decide that Kamala Harris is the right person for the job.
Have you had a chance to speak with Governor Shapiro?
You know, I've spoken to the governor a number of times throughout this process. He and I often speak regularly. So I have had a number of opportunities to talk to him. But I will say this, the conversations that the governor and I have are private, and we're going to keep them private.
Well, I'm just wondering if you've had a chance to speak with him since this all happened. That's it.
Yeah, I've had a number of opportunities to speak with the governor.
Okay, without giving away personal, is he disappointed? Is he on board? Is he, you know, that's not giving away the substance.
Well, as I said, every conversation the governor and I have are private, and they're going to remain that way.
Okay, so let's just say overall, do you think Pennsylvania is on board with this choice and helping to move the Harris-Walz ticket forward?
Yeah, I do think. I think Pennsylvania Democrats are on board. I think, as I said, we know this election is going to be close, particularly here in Pennsylvania. The last presidential election was decided by less than a percentage point. And we believe this race is going to be equally as close. But we are committed to doing the work. We've opened a record number of field offices across the state to help elect Vice President Harris and now Governor Walz. And so we're ready to do the work. Folks are going to be on the ground. We're going to be on the doors, and we're ready to do everything we need to do to deliver a victory for the Harris campaign.
You know, I do have to say that, and I'm sure that you remember this, during COVID, during George Floyd, you know, I spoke with Governor Shapiro. He was not the governor then. He was the attorney general. I spoke with him numerous times. He is sharp as a tack on cable, just on television. He is very liked in Pennsylvania, very smart, charismatic. Both my female and male viewers thought he was handsome. He would have been, he is a good choice, would have been a good choice. I think both men would be a good choice for the vice president, but she went with the person I think she thought would deliver best for her. Do you disagree with that?
You know, look, I can't get into the mindset of the vice president as she went through her process and what she weighed one way or another. But ultimately, I think she made the decision that she thinks does two things. One, helps her win, and two, is the person that she wants to govern with. So I think, you know, I respect her decision, and I think everyone ought to respect that decision and get on board to help move the campaign forward on to victory.
That's actually a very good answer, because I am watching the folks, you can't see it, but the folks who are in the chat, because the show is live and it is airing on YouTube and other streaming and social sites. And they are saying, hey, get on board. Both gentlemen are good. Someone said, I even wanted her to pick Kelly, but I am happy with Walz. I would have been happy with Shapiro. So I think she was, is it fair to say, kind of an embarrassment of riches?
What do you mean, like that she just had too many great options?
Where she had three, she had actually more than three great options, I think. Yeah. She had a number of great options.
Yeah, look, I think it's a testament to the deep bench that the Democratic Party has of capable, charismatic leaders who are doing great work in their states and their respective communities. And so I think we are lucky to be living at a time where we have such a deep bench of Democrats who are going to contribute mightily, not just to the national conversation, but locally as well. And so I think it's an exciting time to be a Democrat.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know if you want to respond to this, but you know, I mean, you are in the political world. You have been out there. Sort of the criticism that progressives have lobbied toward the governor there, talking about college writings. He even responded to it. This is him on his college writings just a couple of days ago. Can we play that, please? Okay, perhaps we don't have it. Okay, he was surprised. He said he was surprised that he was being asked about something that was more than 20 years ago when he was in college. My response was, I can't even remember what I said or did on Wednesday, but for something that happens when you write something in college, people change and they evolve. Do you think the criticism that's been levied at him, you think it's fair?
Yeah, look, I think the criticism comes with the spotlight in a lot of regards. And I think you're absolutely right. I'm 35 years old. The governor is 50 years old. The things that we did at 20 are very different than the people we are now. And I think most people recognize that people grow and evolve and change. But I will say this, Josh Shapiro won a landslide election in Pennsylvania to be governor. He has a over 60% approval rating for his work as governor here in Pennsylvania. And so I think, quite frankly, all the criticism that has been levied against him, voters in Pennsylvania don't necessarily agree with that criticism. And he's won three elections here statewide.
Yeah, amen. So how are voters? Have you had a chance to speak to any voters regarding what happened? I'm sure they're happy for the ticket, but I'm sure they're disappointed that their governor was not the pick.
Yeah, look, as I've traveled around the state, people are happy that Josh Shapiro is going to continue to be their governor, right? People like the work that we've been doing. They're supportive of the work that we're doing. And I think folks are happy that we're going to continue doing that good work here in Pennsylvania.
Where do you plan to be today for the rally?
I'm going to be at the rally. I'm going to be in Philadelphia at the Lycarius Center supporting the Harris-Walz ticket.
Yeah. And what do you think the mood is going to be like? Do you think people are going to be positive about it? Or are they going to be, oh my gosh, why didn't you pick our guy?
No, I think people are going to be excited to rally around the Harris-Walz ticket. And I think it's going to be, there's going to be great energy in the room. I think there's going to be like 10,000 people that show up. And I think it's going to be an exciting rally. And I think people are going to come out of there ready to move forward and ready to elect Kamala Harris as our next president.
We're honored to have you on the program, Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis. Is there anything else that you want to say to our subscribers before? Because I know you have a very busy schedule. You got to get ready for the rally. I'm sure you got to get your talking points together. You got to talk to from people. Perhaps you're going to call the governor, or he's going to call you, and you guys are going to coordinate.
Well, the governor and I talk all the time. So, but I would just say it's critical that folks come together, rally around the Harris-Walz ticket, and we defeat Donald Trump in November.
Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, thank you. I really appreciate it. As I said, I know you're busy, so we'll see you soon, and perhaps we'll have you back, after the rally this evening. That would be great if you could. But thank you for your time, okay? I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care. So, Patrick Kulikin, the reason I had you wait, one, the Lieutenant Governor only had a short amount of time, but also you are a reporter. And so I want you to respond to what you have just heard, because you're in Minnesota. I got to tell you, I can say a meteoric rise, at least when it comes to vice presidential picks, because a couple of days ago I said, it's got to be Tim Walz. It's got to be Tim Walz, even though it's a long shot. Look at what he's done with the messaging and weird and on and on. But it still is a bit surprising. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. And I think that the reality is that outside of the political junkie bubble that we're in, I think very few Americans have any idea who Tim Walz is. And so I would say this is the riskier pick if you're just looking at the electoral calculation. Shapiro certainly gives you an advantage in Pennsylvania, and I think Pennsylvania is considered the hinge state. So I'm actually surprised. But when I go back to the years I've been covering Tim Walz pretty intensely since 2017, you always knew that he had this fascinating biography, and he's a great retail politician. So I think that I'm not surprised that he took advantage of this moment.
Yeah. Look, when I first saw him, of course I knew who Tim Walz was, all of my years in cable news. And I knew that he was sharp, but I didn't know that he was that quick, especially when it comes to messaging. And I didn't know that he had that connection with young progressives, even though I don't think that he legislates from a particularly progressive, stance. I think that he is somewhat centrist. Some of his things are progressive when you look at, what he wants to do, making sure that kids have school lunches in public schools, etc. But I don't think that he's particularly progressive. Do you?
Well, he came into office as definitely the second choice of the progressives in the party in 2018. He did not win. Here in Minnesota, we have this kind of strange endorsement process. He did not win at the convention, the Democratic convention. He wound up winning in a primary, and he was seen as the more centrist of the two Democrats. What did change, however, in 2023, after he was reelected in 22, and on his coattails, there were narrow Democratic majorities in both chambers of the legislature, and they did pass a long wish list of progressive policy items, not just the school lunch. I mean, they legalized marijuana. They did a carbon-free mandate by 2040. They raised taxes for housing and transportation. They enacted a large child tax credit. They expanded the working family tax credit. So it was a long list of a progressive wish list, and whether or not he was the guy driving that, and he wasn't necessarily. I mean, I would give credit to the legislature for those moves. He did sign those bills, and he certainly is enjoying some of the fruits of that work in 2023 right now.
Yeah. Listen, this is the interview, I believe, that sort of catapulted him to the top of the list, or at least for people to think about him as a potential vice presidential pick for the vice president, Kamala Harris. Right now, Twitter is over the moon about Walz. They're already making meme videos like this one. Watch this.
We believe in a brighter future that makes room for all Americans. We believe in a future where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead. And we are not going back.
Back.
9-9 is a good sign. Who the fuck are you? I'm a brat when I'm bumping that. No one wanna hit my track. Are you bumping that? Till the windows crack, I'll be bumping that. No one ever go home, don't sleep, don't eat. Just do it on repeat, keep. I'm in the club, yeah, I'm 365 party girl. Should we do a little key? Should we have a little line? When I'm doing real well, when I'm meet me in the bathroom with you. 365 party girl, French manicure. I wipe away the residue. Yeah. I'm mad up hot when I'm. No, I really don't stop when I'm. Gonna jump when it drops when I'm. Down 999 right, is a good time.
Right, we get it. So they love him. That's what I said. The young people look. Is he that popular in his state with young people?
Well, I think his popularity has risen considerably in just the past 2-3 weeks. But I think you have to remember that he doesn't come from a traditional political background. He was a geography teacher for 20 years. And so he was a guy who was almost in a way, if you think of a great charismatic teacher, he was on stage.
Was he a football coach as well?
He was also the defensive coordinator for Mankato West, and they won a state title, which is a huge deal here. So this is somebody who, and he was in the National Guard for 24 years. And this is, he just loves people. He's from a small town in Nebraska. He comes here with his wife, and Minnesotans are very proud of Minnesota. And I've lived all over the country. I don't think I've quite experienced it like this. And he has the pride of a convert. He's somebody who moved here, and he just loves the place. His first year in office as a governor, in 2019, he spent, I think, all 10 days at the state fair. Because the state fair is a huge deal here, and there's a rivalry with Iowa. You're going to see the record attendance is 100,000, and he just loves that kind of retail politics and being around people and talking about how great Minnesota is. And so he has that skill as a retail politician that you have to be sort of born with, but also I think developed over decades, not just in politics, but also in the classroom.
Yeah. When I first saw him do what he did in regards to when he started appearing more and more on cable news, I was like, wow, you know what? This guy's actually pretty good on television, and shaping a message is really important, for the campaign. So there's one more thing that I want to play of him, and this is him on Twitter. This is the one from Political Players, if you can play this. It's him with his daughter at the state fair. Since Mr. Kulikin has been talking about the state fair, we want to play this. Here it is.
All right, Governor Walz here out at the state fair with my daughter.
Hope.
Every year we as a family do something old and something new. I get to pick something, a classic, the old mill ride, to do that. And then Hope gets to pick something new.
I think we're going to go do the slingshot.
Which I don't know what it is, and they're keeping it from me. But then we're going to go get some food, corn dogs.
I'm vegetarian.
Turkey then?
And turkey's then, meat.
Not in Minnesota, turkey special. And we will go do some of those things and report back.
Minnesota, it's worth it. Woo. Wow, that is wild.
That was pretty cool.
That is wild.
Awesome. That would be good.
It was okay. It was so worth it. Good call.
It was good.
Thanks for talking me into it.
You're welcome.
I mean, come on. You have to relate to that. By the way, I did that. Someone talked me into doing that once at a fair, and I screamed like a baby with colic. I could not handle it. I don't know how he was able to, just smile his way through it. But that's very relatable. Who wouldn't like that? I like the guy,
Patrick. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a Midwestern dad. And again, that experience in the classroom. And going to their...
Someone said in the chat, Big Joe Grizzly said, check the Springsteen shirt.
Yeah. But he can wear it authentically. It's like, it's a thing with all these like white guy politicians that gotta like Springsteen. But like, I actually think he probably actually, listens. He likes Springsteen authentically. And you're going to see lots of this. And I think that was ultimately... that ability to communicate with average Americans is ultimately, and it's some kind of chemistry that the vice president had with him in the interviews, I presume. And he's a guy who can make a great first impression. And so that chemistry and then his ability to connect with people. Again, I would say they're going to have to get the word out, because his name recognition nationally is probably, I'm sure it's less than 10%. So for all of these new fans he has on Twitter, I think it's just worth remembering that, you know, even in Wisconsin, where he's the governor of the neighboring state, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have no idea who he is.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of, I think that's a positive, I think, that he's new and people don't know who he is, because he gets to introduce himself. He gets to create a narrative around himself. He gets to create the person, the character, whatever it is, the image that people want to see, without really many influencing factors from the past.
Yeah, and so Republicans will try to define him and do so from here, and they'll say that he's over, you know, I mean, they're going to show photos, I think, and video of Minneapolis burning after the murder of George Floyd. And they're going to talk about school test scores, like all over the country. We've struggled here in the wake of the pandemic. So Republicans will try to define him. I do think he's probably going to get, you know, they're going to get just, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of earned media. As you say, he's good on cable and he's good on TV. And so they're going to try to get this image of Tim Walz out that the internet left has fallen in love with the last 2 weeks. They're going to try to get it out to the whole country, and especially those blue wall states.
Do you think it's a positive for them, maybe a blessing in disguise, that they have this sort of condensed timeline? Excuse me, that it offers them, perhaps it is more powerful and less, maybe it's more concentrated than, more potent rather, than having sort of this long timeline for people to dig into your past and to make more mistakes and so on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's worked to her advantage already, in part because, as you say, that long campaign and the way that long campaign has often played out, and you know this well, is that some of the opposition research will bubble up in the right-wing media, and then it sort of floats over into the mainstream. But all of that process takes a long time. And so I think that they're probably playing catch-up right now. Not to say there aren't oppo books on Tim Walz, but they've got to figure out what's best and then get those stories out there. And I think the compressed timeline, it is working to the Democrats' advantage right now.
Yeah. Honestly, though, listen, you can talk about, you know, what happened after COVID and about, you know, what happened to education and what have you, but it happened to a lot of places. And there are places where I'm from, a place where I'm from, Louisiana, and states that I've lived in that had not so good rates when it comes to education and literacy and all of that before the pandemic. So you can always find something. But the fact that he is so well liked in a Midwestern state, which is the same thing that they're touting about J.D. Vance, so wouldn't there be some hypocrisy in there to say, you know, oh, he's not qualified, he's a whatever, this or that? It's kind of similar to J.D. Vance as well.
Well, also, as the governor of Minnesota, he can point to all of these quality of life measures where Minnesota is often leading or in the top five, like life expectancy, certainly our schools. We have this some really bad racial opportunity gaps, but we do have some of the best schools, depending on where you live. You know, we have a very textured, diverse economy, an excellent healthcare system. The Mayo Clinic is here. We have a number of Fortune 500 headquarters are here. You know, we have the best park system in the country in St. Paul and Minneapolis. So it's, I think that Minnesota is a place that other places often aspire to. And he's going to be able to be he's the best salesman for Minnesota and for what he has achieved here and what really a half century of progressive governance has achieved here.
Yeah. So talk to me about him and his family and, well, not even though you spoke a little bit about that, but what do you think happens next? Obviously they have the rally today and then it's going to be a nationwide tour with them. What do you see as a seasoned reporter happening?
Well, he's very good at this, and I think he'll be fine. As you mentioned, his family, there's a couple interesting little nuggets here. His wife, Gwen, is a very strong, powerful figure in her own right. She's a lifelong educator. They struggled to have children, and they had to rely on IVF to do so. And he's got this great line about how he says that it's not by chance that our daughter, our oldest daughter, is named Hope. And so I think that was another sort of kismet moment of this campaign, that IVF has become such a bad issue for Republicans. And here you have a guy whose family is due to IVF. They're just kind of like the all-American Midwestern family. And I think you saw that clip from when they're at the state fair. And he's got a teenage son. It'll be an interesting introduction to the American public. But the bottom line is he's just sort of a likable guy. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Republicans are going to have to try to puncture.
Yeah. What did I want to ask you? Oh, have you had a chance to read? What is the headline? What is a Minnesota reformer? What are the papers saying there now? If you had a front cover and you could write a headline, what is that going to be when the paper comes out? Maybe they're perhaps with a special edition.
Minnesota.
Even though the paper is always living now, it's online. It's not like people wait extra, right?
Minnesota media is sort of famous or infamous for being thirsty for national attention and local angles on national stories. So it's going to be quite overwhelming here with Wall's coverage. But my lead, my headline was you plucked from obscurity, because that's the reality. I mean, I still think the American public doesn't know who Tim Walz is. They don't know much about him. And so the Walz and Harris have some work to do to introduce him. I think if they can get him in front of Americans through that retail campaigning environment, they're probably going to like what they see.
Let's see. What else do we have? So can we put up, this is the tweet from Harris. From the Vice President Harris of the official announcement. By the way, I think she changed her wallpaper, which is, you know, the thing behind her, the big blue thing. And now it says Harris Walz. I am proud to announce that we have asked Tim Walz to be my running mate as a governor, a coach, a teacher, a veteran. He has delivered for working families like his. It's great to have him on the team. Now it's, I'm reading from the actual small little thing. Now let's go to work. Join us. And then it's Harris Walz. Pretty simple and really supportive. I think that if you look at what has happened with Vice President Kamala Harris and her campaign, I mean, it's been pretty well run almost to perfection. You know, if you're looking at it in the vein of a political campaign, especially this late in the game, being able to have the whole Democratic Party coalesce around her, and then now this pick, I don't know, people would say, is it hers to lose? Is it theirs to lose at this point?
I still think it's probably more, it's a toss-up because of the Electoral College advantage that the Trump campaign has. But I think you're right that it does seem that the handoff from Biden to Harris really was flawless, and they've managed to take advantage of this quick timeline. They've avoided major mistakes, and so I think the Democrats were on their way to losing, and now I think it's much more of a toss-up.
Yeah, it's really shocking. I mean, what has it been? Has it been 2 weeks? Has it been about 2 weeks, right? Since she's been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was crazy because I said after the debate, I was like, I don't know. I think it's going to be a Trump presidency. And then after the shooting, I was like, oh, well, he won. And then all of a sudden, just like that, you never know. Fortunes change. What do you think?
That's true. And I going back to the to Biden stepping aside, I think potentially an important player here is former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, you know, at least was reported in the D.C. press, she was backing walls and whipping for him. I think organized labor were also behind this pick. So even though Walz, we feel like he's come out of nowhere, there were some strong institutional forces behind him. Remember, he did serve in Congress for 12 years, and he was not just some random backbencher. I mean, he was a guy who obviously Pelosi, she relied on as a Democrat who held that seat in a very in a pretty conservative district that went for Trump twice.
I'm looking at some political analysis. My friend Bakari Sellers, who is very intimate with all this, says some people on X think it's a great pick. Some people think it's a bad pick. That's my analysis. Yeah. Is that, do you think that's fair to say? I mean, I actually think it's a really smart pick. Look, I really do like Josh Shapiro. I also liked Mark Kelly as well. And as I said, and you know, there was Pete Buttigieg who was possibly there, and a number of other people, Andy Beshear. I think that she had, you know, there was an embarrassment of riches because she had a number of people that were, quite frankly, really good picks and could have been good vice presidents. But quite honestly, I got to be honest with you, I think that this Tim Walz pick is actually really, really, really smart.
Yeah, I mean, the old saw is that people don't vote based on the vice president.
I think this time makes a difference.
And we'll see whether that plays out or not. And I think not going with the governor of Pennsylvania when you need to win Pennsylvania, it certainly it's makes it seem like a risky pick. But at the same time, I think she is trying to convey a certain vibe. And that's what she achieves here with Walz, that this is a regular guy from working class background. He's a teacher and a coach and a member and in the National Guard. And he can talk to average people like a normal person. And he's not weird, to use his word. I'm guessing that she also just has good chemistry with him personally.
Let me ask you this, Patrick. Do you think that, how much did let's just be honest, how much did Israel play into this? How much did, Shapiro's stance, what he's written about Israel, what he has said about Israel, do you think that was a factor? And does that take it off the table now?
Does it help? I don't really know. I mean, nobody has convincingly explained to me how Walz's position or any of the candidates' position on Israel is different than Josh Shapiro. And I do fear that there was sort of an undercurrent of anti-Semitism in some of what when people were saying that somehow Walz would be a better choice if you're a backer of Palestine. But that was certainly the perception that somehow Shapiro was going to be worse on the Israel-Gaza issue. The other thing to keep in mind here is that if you were to lean away from Israel, you would be disappointing and upsetting a huge an important segment of the Democratic base. I'm not really sure, I certainly have no